Van Hula okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, that's good.
They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to another edition of WZND's Red Zone. I'm Leo Stoddart, your sports director here at WZND, and once again, we're back in triple threat formation. Our co-host is Joey Dwyer, WZND's production director and the voice of the Quad City Storm, and he has something
He's
to say here.
He's right at you.
The boy who lived.
We got Voldemort in the building tonight.
I don't know what that was about, but that was Joey's Voldemort.
Knows Harry Potter, man, then.
I know Harry Potter, but he's holding his pen the
that
way
was Voldemort. Pretty good, Joey.
I don't know what prompted him to do that.
Harry Potter!
Okay, you don't have to do it multiple times.
Let's get back in.
That's going to be me the whole show. Guys, it's loose today. It's loose today in the studio.
I don't like it.
Joey's had too much sugar or something. This is bad. All right. Our third voice, we're already off the rails here, but here it is, Joe Kennedy, our producer of TV 10 News. What you got for us today, Joe?
And we got a lot going on today. We got Redbird recap coming up, and then after that, talk some NFL championships, some NBA big deadline day. Andrea Vola is going to be joining us, and then, you know, three up, three down. So we got a lot.
Before we get into that, I think we should let you know, if you want to take one of our jobs, work at WZND, because after hearing that intro, we're probably not going to be doing this show much longer.
We got one foot out the door, not voluntarily.
Here we go. Let me get back on, boys. Let's do this ad read and then get going with it. But you can join us at our general info meeting tonight in Fell Hall, room 180 at 7 o'clock, so right after the show. If you think you could do this better than us, which, honestly, that's probably the truth, head right down to Fell 180 and learn more about WZND. If you're not interested in our position, there's tons of other departments you get involved with. Yeah. Social media, public relations, all kinds of stuff. So that was a really cool opportunity. But let's get back into the sports here, guys, because this was a huge week for Illinois State Athletics for maybe a little bit of wrong reasons. I think if anyone doesn't already, volleyball head coach Leah Johnson departed the program after 5 years for an upgrade in position. She took the head coaching job at Michigan State, and this has really left Illinois State Athletics reeling.
And not only did she leave to go to MSU, which, first of all, congratulations to her. It's incredible. She's been incredible here at ISU. She's been always very kind to student media, which we always appreciate. And she really turned this program around and made us easily the best program in the Valley over the past 4 years. But with her departure, and she's bringing her assistant coaches as well, it really puts the players in a difficult spot because a lot of these freshmen and sophomores are players who we did not source locally.
Of course.
They are players who came from the ends of the earth to come play at this program because it has become a very, very like prestigious program over the past 5 years. And so now you have these players who have come from, like Tamara Otene, who came all the way from New Zealand to come play for the Redbirds, and now all of a sudden it's like you came to play for this coach and you're kind of on the limb.
And to bring things back to Johnson real quick, I don't think we blame her, because the way this went down was Michigan State's head coach, who's also an Illinois State alum, which I think is kind of cool, she retired about 2 weeks ago. So that was kind of after the coaching carousel already happened for volleyball. I think Leah's intentions were originally to return Illinois State next year.
She's signed that contract extension.
Right, the extension that she finalized around December got made official in January. So I think this was just an offer that came up late in the fold that was just too good to turn down. Because look at it. She signed with them after National Signing Day. Like, this isn't when you normally make a coaching hire for Michigan State. So I think this was just one of those offers too good for Leah to turn down. And I think looking at the program for Illinois State, I don't think they're going to maybe take a step back. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of these players. But this is a job that is very attractive for any coach. You think they were the youngest team in their conference last year. They won their conference. They made the national tournament. the job's kind of already done. You have this nucleus of players that are already very good. You just got to get in and make sure you keep them, basically. Yeah.
But you brought it up, how this hiring happened after the whole coaching carousel had kind of run its course.
True.
And so now that puts ISU in a position where they can't promote from within because they're not going to have any of their assistants, and they have kind of lost out on the opportunity to look at some of those high ticket value candidates, right? Or the candidates who were floating around at the beginning. Now you really have to go on a search. So either you're going to have to pick somebody up who made it through that first round of hires, or you're going to have to do what MSU did and poach from another school.
Yeah, and like, I don't know much about the whole volleyball college coaching carousel much, but if it's anything like kind of with NCAA football or basketball, it's kind of you, at this point when the coaching carousel is gone, you kind of look towards assistant coaches that are at other programs because the other top head coaches that are left go, they're all gone.
And I think that could be good. I mean, it's kind of what happened with Leah Johnson. She was an assistant that got her first head coaching gig with the Redbirds, and look how that went. I think this is one of those programs where if you want to get one of the top assistants in the nation, you probably can because of the way Leah left this program in a better place than she found it. And it makes, for Kyle Brennan, this is kind of where we're going to find out about our good friend Kyle Brennan. We're going to find a little bit about him as an athletic director. This is his first coaching hire, so we'll see what exactly he does here.
And he expressed like just how much he just wanted to win and everything. And it's really going to be interesting to see like what's going to be coming down in place, and especially with the players. Like, imagine what they're thinking and everything, because right now we don't know much about like what's set in stone for the Redbird volleyball program and like what they're doing, who they're doing their workouts with, and such. So,
and
it's really interesting.
It's a tough. Hearing how the Redbirds found out about it was just really tough. It sounds like Leah finalized her contract with Michigan State on Friday, and then she told the players on Monday before their weight session. So they found out just before the rest of the world did. But what I thought was really cool was that at Saturday's basketball game, they honored Coach Johnson, Tamara Otene, and Sarah Kushner for different achievements from last season. So Redbird Athletics, keep in mind, they knew she was leaving. They found out it was official on Friday. So they were keeping it under wraps. They worked in to honor her at the basketball game on Saturday, give her one last chance to interact with the fans. I thought that was a really cool thing. Now knowing that Leah was leaving after that, I think it was cool that whoever made the call to work that into Saturday's basketball game, that was a real first-class move.
We're talking about like moving ahead and what the state of the volleyball team is going to be, or the volleyball program as a whole, will be at ISU. I don't think that it's as dire as we initially thought. Like, because when this came down the pipe originally, my first gut reaction was, oh my goodness, like, we have been a volleyball school. We joke about it in the station, but like, we are a volleyball school because a lot of the other programs have seen limited success in the past 5 years. Like Leo said, you have this nucleus of players, but it is so important for Kyle Brennan to go out and find the right person for this job, find the right person to get the team and keep the momentum going that they had built this past season.
And we've kind of talked about this like over the past couple of Red Zones about how we always kind of knew that maybe Leah Johnson would be moving on from Illinois State. I mean, it's just kind of what happens when you're not in a Power 5 or a Big 10 type of program in Michigan State. You want to move up as a coach, first of all, because of the competition, but also they're going to be paying you probably a lot more money compared to the schools in the lower divisions or lower level.
And just, I mean, I think it's just, it's an interesting thing where a coach leaves for a better program, but there's no bad blood, I think, at least amongst the fan base. I don't know how the players are feeling, but it seems like people are genuinely happy for her. It's not bad blood that we're just rooting for her to succeed at Michigan State. Like, I think that speaks to the character of Leah Johnson, that she left us. Like, she left Illinois State, but everybody wants her to do well at her next destination, and it's just fun to still have that. That it's not like we're upset she left and are going to be angry about it. It's just she's that type of coach, and she's probably going to do some good things at Michigan State, a team that was 11th in the Big Ten last season, but she has a chance to bring them up to the tops of that.
Yeah, so hopefully she does well up there. She gained a Sparty fan up there for me.
Joe was already
volleyball.
A Sparty fan.
just football.
Okay, volleyball too now.
Volleyball now too, so there we go.
Of course.
Joe, I have the East Lansing.
How soon before you put in your transfer papers?
I mean,
you've still got 4 years of eligibility if you want to walk onto the team. I know you got connections.
I think I got my ways. I think I could do it.
They could use a starting center.
Yeah, they could.
That's all I'm saying. You could transition to long snap role too. I think you've got a chance.
Joe's going to run it back with Peyton Thorne and Jaden Reed. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking some gridiron, not about Joe's walk-on career, but about the NFL championship that's happening this weekend. That's next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stotter, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kenny. Now we're taking things to the gridiron. We're talking about a pretty big game that's happening this weekend in Los Angeles. The
Joe Burr.
LA Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals are going to play for a trophy. You might have heard about this one. And this is always one of the biggest sports weekends of the year. It feels like people that don't even watch sports watch this game. So I think before we start off, do you guys have any like traditions you do for the NFL championship or a way you normally watch this game, either in college or back home before you came?
I mean, wings is a must. Right.
Okay.
Like wings.
Squares.
I've never been a big squares guy.
Especially as a kid, you know, it just made things more fun when your team, I don't know, when you weren't as much into it, you're like, oh yeah, I got
that's fair. I am a big, and this might sound a little not meathead sports guy of me, but I'm a big fan of the spectacle around the NFL championship.
Okay.
So I love the food that comes with it, and I love like when you get to hang out with all your friends, because at the end of the day, if your team's not in it, do you really care that much about what's happening?
If anything, I think that makes it a little more fun to watch. Like,
yeah.
You can
exactly.
Just kind of enjoy the event.
Exactly.
And it's like the only Sunday the whole year when you're a kid that you go to hang out with your friends
yeah,
at like 5
right.
o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like such a different vibe, too.
And it's like if the Bears were playing, obviously I'd spend the entire game just stressed out of my mind.
And that's what I think. If my team was in it, I wouldn't want to watch it with a bunch of people, like having to hear their stupid opinions
about
the game.
It'd be
like,
three people that I trust to sit in silence.
Maybe not even my parents.
I cannot watch football with my dad. Because he's just like, he's such a Bears old head.
Yeah.
And he's just like, man, this defense has gone soft. And I'm like, dude, you can't decapitate a quarterback anymore. But anyway,
my mom likes to like call out the plays. She thinks the team should run, like messing with like me and my brother. They're like, they should run like the option here or something.
My mom
like,
just does a prediction. Yeah. And then she says so many predictions and one comes right. She's like, I told you.
She's like Tony Romo.
Tony Romo. Yeah. She's like, here we go, Joe.
But it's just going to be a fun day. My roommate Marty's going to make some chili dip. We're probably going to order some food. Shout out Marty. I think he's my only roommate that hasn't gotten a shout out in Red Zone, so I wanted to work that
Marty.
In there.
Yeah.
We shout out Tommy Gleason on the basketball broadcast last night, so everybody's getting a shout out. But it's just going to be a fun day, and let's get into the game here, because for the first really time this decade, it's weird that we don't really have a Tom Brady team. There's no Patriots. It feels like we finally have two fresh teams. I know the Rams were just in it a couple years ago, but it's a new perspective for this game, and I'm just really excited for either team in this.
Because the Rams, you were saying, they were in the NFL championship a couple years ago, but I believe it's six or eight players that have still remained from that
roster.
It's a
whole new team,
so it's pretty much a whole new team. And even this year, throughout the season, throughout the offseason, getting Von Miller, Odell Beckham, and I mean, it's pretty much a whole new team every week for the Rams.
It's like,
and losing Robert Woods, too.
Like the Rams, it's like when you're like playing Madden and just go trade for a bunch of star players.
Gotta win
it kind of works.
This
guy's
hurt.
It's like you're not going to stick with the franchise mode for more than a season, so you can shell out all your draft
picks. Your tricks,
But you're absolutely right when you're talking about how it's kind of this fresh view for the championship. And it's these two teams, the Rams, who have had some success, but in the past 5 years. But before that, they were kind of just okay. And then the Bengals, who have been historically bad for our entire lives, basically. And they finally have been able to put the pieces together. And it's so fun. It's so fun to see a team and a fan base get to experience this.
That's what I hope for the Bears, you know, because, Joe, you're saying our whole life they haven't won a playoff game since the 90s until this year, and now they've won all these playoff games in the NFL championship. So, I mean, that just gives me hope for going through a lot of pain, a lot of struggle, losing in playoff games. Maybe at the end of the day that
someday
Justin Fields maybe could even do it.
And just looking at these two quarterbacks, these are two guys you feel good for. Like, Matt Stafford's been through a lot in his career, and he's been underrated. He's on the if you look at all-time passing yards, touchdowns, he's pretty high up there, and you don't realize it because he played for some bad teams. And then Joe Burrow, simply put, might just be one of the coolest humans on the planet, and he's just someone really fun to cheer for too.
And both of these guys have been good, I mean, their entire careers. Number one overall picks, Joe Burrow, not maybe as big of as a recruit going back to college days as Matthew Stafford, but these guys have always had the expectations and everything. But I think now with Joe Burrow, he's coming in after a NCAA championship just 2 years ago, now going to the NFL championship. So I think he's ready for this moment. Like, a lot of young guys, they're not, but Joe Burrow's just Joe Cool.
It's wild because no player's ever won the Heisman, the NCAA championship, and then a Lombardi trophy in their career. And Joe Burrow has a chance to do it within 3 years of each other, which is just remarkable.
And I think it's such a weird comparison to make. And because obviously, if you get taken first overall, you're going to a team that was bad.
Yeah.
Right? And so Joe Burrow goes to this team and they are able to so successfully build around him and use the pieces they already had to create this team that really complements him. And you've seen the results. Matt Stafford spent 10 years of his career absolutely wasted in Detroit when they
weren't. Shout out Steve.
Shout out Steve Sees. God love him and all the Detroit fans who have to suffer through this.
That was just painful for him to watch, like as an NFL fan.
I know. So it has to be cathartic for Lions fans,
well,
too.
I don't think so, because just maybe it's because I got Steve's tweets coming up in my timeline, but it seems like it's this weird faction of Lions fans are so excited for Stafford. And I was going to say that the same thing about Burrow, where you have LSU fans, and even Ohio State still claims him as one of their own. Like, these are, we're talking about a fresh perspective. It feels like so many different factions of fans are cheering for these two guys, and much less the whole teams. Like, this is just a refreshing championship weekend.
And it's like national coverage. I feel like a lot of people are just circling in on Joe Burrow, calling him, I mean, Joe Cool, great guy. He's doing a great season, good postseason. But Matthew Stafford has had an even better postseason. 6 touchdowns, 1 interception, over 300 yards per game in the 3 games that he's played. And it was a problem coming into the postseason. I mean,
he was struggling, led the
NFL in picks the last eight games. And so seeing him being able to do what he's been able to do with Odell Beckham too, Cooper Kupp, like this wide receiver matchup, this offensive matchup is one of the best I think we've seen in the, I don't even can't remember a better offensive matchup we've seen in the NFL championship than we're going to see on Sunday.
No, it's a lot of high flying offense. I think. And I feel like this is how it's going to go. We're like, we're talking all about the offense, and then like the defenses like show up too.
Last year the defense showed up.
Yeah, and that's the same thing. We're talking about like how good the offenses were, and then it happens. And I feel like in this game you always see it where just maybe it's because of the moment, but it ends up being a tightly played game, and it's not like a college football championship where you have scores in the 50s, but like these teams are going to play very well, and it's going to be like a chess match, basically.
And obviously, I think it's a fair assumption to say that most of the country is pulling for the Bengals. Like, they're just such a feel-good story that it's hard not to root for them, but it's, at the same time, it's kind of hard for me to see their path to victory.
I know.
I think the Rams are a much better team. And, Leo, you were talking about the defense is stepping up. Yeah. And I think we saw Joe Burrow get sacked, 11 times in a playoff game? Or nine, however many times. It was a ridiculous amount. And the fact that he'll be going up against definitively the best defensive lineman in the league right now.
Mean human and Aaron Donald,
And then his supporting cast, who is, it's not a bunch of scrubs, like, Joe Burrow might be in some real trouble in the backfield.
When you have Von Miller and Leonard Floyd as your 2 and 3 on the offensive line, that's a really good problem. Your defensive line is a really good problem to have. And I think we talked about this a little bit in the wild card, how the Bengals still might be a year too early, where you have the quarterback, you have your breakouts at receiver, but they don't have that offensive line to protect Burrow yet. And I think that might still come back to hurt them.
And you, being like too early and everything, once you get to the big game, like, you don't know if you'll ever be back into that situation. So it's just something that like is in the back of your mind.
Because you see it, Joe, like the teams that lose this championship for whatever reason, look at their decline versus the teams that end up winning it. I mean, look at what happened to the Falcons or some other teams from this past decade. The Carolina Panthers, teams that make it to that championship on maybe a team of Desi season, for whatever reason, it's harder to get back when you lose. Not every team is like the 90s Buffalo Bills where you go to 4 straight. But for other teams, it could be deflating to lose that game. So let's get into some of these predictions here. I think, what do we want to start? Should we do final score, or should we save that for end? Or should we get into some of the fun stuff here?
Yeah, let's do the fun stuff first.
Some fun stuff.
Okay, let's go with non-football related stuff. First things first. We're
still part of the game.
We want to do the Gatorade color.
Gatorade color.
That gets dumped on the winning coach.
Yep.
All right, I've got a strong feeling, and this may just be because of my Gatorade preferences too, strong feeling it's going to be a lemon-lime.
Ooh, okay.
Like, I'm feeling lemon lime in my gut.
Okay.
Just because that's your favorite go-to?
Well, because, like, if you think about the flavors of Gatorade, right?
Yeah.
And you think about which one gets you feeling the most hydrated, the most electrolyted up.
I do agree with that. I don't know why.
Nothing
that's the classic.
Nothing makes me feel athletic more like lemon lime Gatorade. Because it doesn't, because it's like, not super sweet. It's not the best tasting one, so it's almost like a chore to drink it. You're like, okay, I'm ready to go bash some heads.
So I have a theory. In college football, we're seeing the wackier celebrations after the game. The Duke's Mayo Bowl, the Idaho Potato Bowl. I think, and this is all depending on the Bengals winning, because it wouldn't really work if the Rams win. If the Bengals win, they're going to dump a cooler full of Skyline chili on head coach Zach Taylor. That's what's going to happen. That's, I don't know if you can find that on some lines. But.
Did you see the tight end CJ Azuma said if the Bengals do win the big game that he'll bathe in a bathtub full of Skyline chili?
I have friends that go to school in Ohio and they just say that stuff's like so disgusting, but like you have to do it in Ohio. Like
definitely have to try it just to say it.
Yeah, but it's
nothing great.
I'm sure people look at the food from Illinois too and they're like, what?
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway.
But yeah, going back to colors of the Gatorade, Leo's going
chili.
Leo's going with chili flavored. Yep. I'm gonna go. I think I went with this last year. I don't think it hit, but I'm gonna go with the classic like clear Gatorade, or it could be water. That's something that happens.
They water down the Gatorades anyway in the coolers because you know they don't want the players just drinking all the sugar and stuff. So it is more water than Gatorade at the end of the day.
And they also have water tanks out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
You never know which one you're going to grab. So, yeah I'm going to go with the clear.
Attention, they grab it.
Okay.
So let's go. So the national anthem over-under is set for 135.
Yes.
On the top of my head, I don't have in front of me who's singing it. I think that's what Joey's looking up right now.
Mickey Guyton.
Okay. I think it's you always got to go with the over for that because for whatever artist is singing this, this is their big moment of the year. The whole world, the whole nation really is watching you. You have to go over with that. Draw some lines out.
I don't remember where I heard this, but somebody said that Mickey Guyton has an infamously short national anthem.
Really? Guyton has previously sung the
You guys did your research,
Dan.
Great.
At the National Memorial Day concert last May and in the 2015 Country Radio Seminar.
Look at Joe.
And both of those performances went under 90 seconds.
Exactly.
So under a minute and a half. But you also got to think, like, maybe they – I feel like people, like, look at this before they're going out to do the national anthem at the big game. They're like, maybe I'll stretch out
how much airtime do I want tonight? Yeah.
How much airtime, and maybe I'll just mess up a couple
that
people.
That last note really hold on to it.
Exactly.
I'm going with the under.
I think I'll also go with the under just because, like, every Super Bowl every championship anthem performer should always look back to the Whitney Houston rendition.
Yeah, yeah.
That one was just perfect. But no, I think I'll take the over. I like a little bit of I don't know. I like a little bit of pizzazz.
I
like a little bit of pizzazz.
Okay. So this is one I didn't put on our prep sheet, but I talked about it with Joe before the show. Who's going to be the most random celebrity that pops up in a commercial?
Oh, in a commercial?
Yeah.
I thought you were going with the game.
Oh, or the game, too. I like that, too.
Because the game, you know that Rob Lowe will be there.
Wearing a neutral hat.
That's the one of the best memes to come out of the NFL ever. That one's so funny.
Like that, but that's not random because we expect it.
I know.
It.
Okay, random celebrity.
Like, who's a celebrity from Cincinnati? I feel like there are some celebs that we don't know are from Cincinnati.
Do you guys remember the commercial a couple years ago that was for, I think it was Verizon. They were talking about, like, 4G and 5G and 6G.
Yeah.
And it had Justin Bieber and Ozzy Osbourne.
Ooh, yeah.
That was a great one. That's like kind of along the lines I'm thinking right now of like who could show up.
Yeah. I'm going to do a shout out to ISU and I'm going to say Craig Robinson's going to be in
there. Okay. I mean, he's got that Papa John's ad line going, so you know he's going to have something going. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll probably be in there.
Pizza Hut.
Surprise, maybe like a streamer. Like
I'll throw in Jane Lynch as another ISU shout out.
Pat McAfee.
I wouldn't be shocked if we see Willem Dafoe because he's big with the Spider Man movie this year. And he's got like that weird cult following on social media where like if you post a picture of him doing anything other than acting, you're going to get like 100,000 retweets.
I don't know what it is, and this is so off the rails. This is off the rails, but the fact, like, Willem Dafoe, people just post, like, pictures of Willem Dafoe in his 20s, and I cannot scroll through Twitter without seeing Willem Dafoe.
So I think he's going to show up in a commercial this year.
That's fair.
Because he's got the Spider-Man movie out and everything, but have we had enough fun here where
we should
get into the game?
Let's go back to the footy.
So let's go just keep it simple here first. Championship MVP, one from each team.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, with the Rams, thought about it. I'm just gonna probably keep it with simple as it could be, and I'm gonna go with Cooper Kupp.
Okay.
Just because this year he's had arguably the best season ever for a wide receiver, and he's continued that on throughout the postseason. It's just gonna be, and I think the Bengals secondary is their weak point.
Yeah.
And so I think that Cooper Kupp is a clear favorite right now for the MVP.
I think if the Rams do. Ooh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. I think if the Rams do win, I think it'll be Aaron Donald. I think it'll be a case of the Rams defense stepping up in a big way, shutting down Joe Burrow, and taking away the win. And I think Aaron Donald will be at the forefront of that.
And I was going to take Aaron Donald. So I'll say Von Miller or someone, too, because I think Donald's going to face the double team. So it's going to have to be somebody else in that defensive line.
I mean, it could be Jalen Ramsey, too,
true,
if you're looking at that defense.
Right. But and then if the Bengals win, I think it's going to be because of Joe Burrow, right? Like, he's put this team on his back so many times and has – what was the regular season game where he was, like, limping to the line and still got them in field goal position? Like, Joe Burrow has done some heroic performances, and I think with his lack of protection, he's going to have one of those today – Sunday.
So for my Bengals one, I remember we were saying that about Patrick Mahomes a couple years ago, but Damian Williams, I mean, like, out of nowhere, just wins the MVP for that. So I'm going to go with Joe Mixon, who's having another really good year, 18 touchdowns in the regular season, and he's continued that on throughout the postseason Titans game, a couple of big plays in that. And then I just think that some success, they're going to have to be able to get away from the passing game, and Joe Mixon also can get involved in that category, too. So I think that he's in another great spot, kind of like Cooper Kupp, to maybe just have a great game.
I think that's a great point because the Bengals have so many of these offensive weapons.
Yeah.
And people in the draft were so mad at them for taking Ja'Marr Chase instead of one of the big offensive linemen who are still in the top five. But it has panned out for them in droves.
And that's rookie year.
Their offense is so, so high-powered. And so I just
crucial.
Think, honestly, I think it's going to come down to, can the Rams stop the Bengals offense? Because the Rams offense is going to put up points. It's what they do. They're very well-rounded. Their running game isn't great, but Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp have this connection, like Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase.
So who would be your Bengals pick?
My Bengals pick, it's either Joe Burrow or Ja'Marr.
Okay.
I think I think those two guys, if the Bengals win, you're going to have those two guys to thank.
So to round things out here, let's just do predict a winner, final score here.
Okay, I'm going to be going with the Rams. I think whatever defense, I'm looking at it as a defense is going to win this game. I mean, pretty much every big game, it's kind of come down to that. And last year you saw with the Bucs, and I think you're going to see it again, that the Rams have the better defense and have had the better defense the whole entire season, and it's going to show out again. So I'm going to go with the Rams winning 34-28.
I think I'm going to go with the Bengals. Sorry to disagree, Joe, but I really... Yeah. And this
it's
might,
tough. It was really tough. It's tough to decide.
It might just be because I want the Bengals to win,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that too. I know.
But I think that the Bengals will be able to put up points. I'm going to go, 34-24 Bengals win.
All right. I'm also probably picking with my heart rather than my brain here, going with the Bengals here just because I have really enjoyed what they have going. It's also more, I want the city of Cincinnati to get a win more than the city of L.A. Just because they had
games
the Dodgers a couple
LA
years
too.
Ago. I know. So that's why I'd like to see them lose out on their home field.
It's not even home field. Their fans are not.
Yeah. it's going to be all Bengals.
Yeah. Picking the score, that's hard to do. Like, I feel like it's always, like I said, lower than we think it's going to be. So let's go something random, like 27-20. There's probably going to be some field goals mixed
like
in there.
Yeah.
A guy we didn't even bring up, Evan McPherson. I wish we had time. He's so nasty.
We know he's going to hit
nasty.
The game winner.
So that's all we have for the NFL Championship. It'll be fun to see if these predictions were right, on the mark, off the mark, how many Will and the Foe commercials we have going there. And then we're going to take a break. When we come back, Andrew Vola is going to take us to the hardwood, talk some NBA trade deadline. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
That was head coach Dan Muller after his team just had a huge 16-point comeback win last night over Valparaiso, overtime thriller. But welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. And now we bring on Ottawa's very own Mr. Andrew Avola, and the assistant production director. So he spends a lot of time with Joey Dwyer here at the station.
Yeah,
more him.
That's right. How about we all just remember that I'm Andrew's boss.
More time.
Let's not get crazy here. It's 50-50. Well, let's be honest.
Well, the workload's more like 20-80 way, but
maybe.
We're not here to talk. Let's stick to sports here as we're going to talk about some NBA trade deadline as it's starting to go into a frenzy here. We're seeing big changes happen league-wide, and I think that's one of my favorite things about the NBA trading is that you can just see a star player, a franchise-altering player moved on like some random Tuesday in the middle of the season, and the teams make those big trades so frequent, and there's been quite a few of those the past week or so, Andrew.
Yeah, there definitely has been. It's been one of the crazier ones, more a lot of superstar players getting moved from team to team. One that kind of shocked me, I don't know about you guys, the Kings and the Pacers trade.
Yeah.
Sabonis going to the Kings.
Let's start with that one because
it was just crazy.
How does that help either team? Who's the winner in that, and why did
Pacers
this happen?
I have such strong feelings. So this was a win-now move by the Kings, who, correct me if I'm wrong, are in 13th place in the West.
Yes.
Like, I cannot believe what they did. They got rid of Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield, two of their very good young players. I know some people still think the jury's out on Buddy Hield, but
they
need
money for him.
But I think that Buddy Hield has a lot of potential that was unrealized because Sacramento is just a poverty franchise.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were able to ship, they wanted to ship away these young pieces for a guy who, like, say Sabonis went to the Bulls, that would be a huge pickup for this team that's looking to contend. The Kings are not looking to contend. Instead, they just mortgage their future for this guy who's going to waste the next 3 years on this team.
I know Sabonis, I think, has a pretty friendly cap hit, and the Kings, maybe they're looking kind of as a move to look towards the offseason, maybe get, I don't know if they're going for, like, the playoffs right now. They maybe can get into that play-in spot, but they won't do anything out in the West at all. And so maybe they're just trying to set themselves up for a successful offseason. But honestly, I have no idea. I think the Pacers just fleece them. They're in a more rebuilding mode. They got Tyrese Haliburton. Buddy Hield is there now, but, I mean, I don't see him there for long if they're going to be a rebuilding
team. He's a good piece. But Tyrese Haliburton, dude.
And Tristan Thompson.
That's right. No better rebound.
Tristan Thompson in there.
But Tyrese Haliburton was so good in college. He came into the NBA, and he's had a little
bit of... I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach.
He's had some injury problems.
There's Dan again.
My elbow hit the mouse. Wow, sorry about that, guys.
Tyrese Haliburton has had injury problems in the league, but he's going to be a very talented player. And so I just think that the Pacers are really just I wish I knew. I wish I could be a fly on the wall in the Kings front office and know what in God's green earth was going through their minds, because I have no idea.
I mean, you think about it, like you said, Haliburton, a young player, a guy they drafted high last year in the draft. You know, basically what you're saying is you don't want Haliburton anymore. You must not think he's going to be the player that you think he'll be. Yeah.
Reports came out like Haliburton was like crying like after the trade.
Exactly. Like he's talked about extensively in his post-game press conference, he wants to be there to change the culture there in Sacramento and be that guy that kind of brings them back. And they have another guy as well, De'Aaron Fox, another good, young, you could say, star in the league to pair up with Sabonis. So you could look at it that way. But just the pieces they gave up in return to Indiana, it really made sense for Indiana. Yeah, okay, so they're not looking to win. Sabonis is an all-star caliber player.
And I think that is a good point, because De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis are going to be a good pairing. I think their play styles work really well together, but I just think the Kings gave up so much to get him. And who'd they get? They got Justin Holliday and Jeremy.
Kings get Sabonis,
Jeremy
Holliday,
Hill, right?
Jeremy Lamb,
yep.
And
Jeremy
second
Lamb,
round
yep.
pick for next
and
year.
And still, I don't think the Kings got nearly enough for the wealth for the ransom that they paid.
No, and that's just one of those surprising trades. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit with the Bulls last year, how we didn't want to see them make that type of trade, mortgage their future for a short-term rental. They went with the Vucevic trade, which I thought was very efficient. I don't know if you guys think this leans closer to that, but there have obviously been some very other big-name players being moved the past couple days. We've seen CJ McCollum be moved. We've seen James Harden. It's just a lot of big moves going on in the NBA.
And Andrew, I have not heard your opinions yet on the James Harden trade, because we found out in the office today and then we had to go to class. So I still don't know what your take is on this.
I mean, you could look at it both ways. I mean, a lot of people think it's a good deal. And really, if you think Ben Simmons is going to be a player that he, you know, has shown flashes of being a superstar type caliber player, it'd be a good trade for both teams, because obviously Harden has made it very well known that he wanted out of Brooklyn. But for me, it's just like, yeah, Harden and Embiid could be a good duo. But Harden, great player, but he's had a lot of, you know, problems really going. He's been bounced around from team to team the last couple of years. You know, he wanted out of Houston for a while. He had the whole fiasco with that, how he didn't show up ready. We saw him, and then he didn't really play hard at all for a couple of games for them until they traded him. Yeah, and then they traded him to Brooklyn, and, you know, everybody thought this was going to be the next big three, Harden, Durant, Irving, and they played just 16 games together as a team on Brooklyn, and now Harden wanted out, and, you know, Brooklyn makes sense for them. They're getting Simmons. We'll see if Simmons decides to come back. I mean, who knows? Obviously, he was sitting out for a very long time. It's an interesting trade. It really depends on a lot of factors, how the players play out for their team, for, you know, the prospective teams that they were traded to.
And I feel like the Sixers have tried this a few different times. I mean, they had Jimmy Butler. They've tried a few other players as, like, that other player to go with Embiid, and it all hasn't worked. I wonder whose fault is that more on, the Sixers for acquiring players that don't fit their culture, or is it on the players?
I mean, if you got to look at it, like, because with the Ben Simmons thing, they got him and everything, and, like, they didn't expect he was a number one prospect and everything. You were going to get him for sure. Any team would have got him. And I think it's just – it didn't work out. Like, the team – they made the move to get Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler was kind of a little – who knows what really happened in that Philadelphia locker room and everything. But going to it now, I think both of these teams kind of win the trade. I would think the Nets, though, are a little bit more of an advantage because they get Andre Drummond, too, in the trade. Yeah. And that's a big – big presence that the Nets have been needing the past two seasons, someone that's going to hold down that number five spot. And then also you're going to have Simmons now probably at that number four spot, maybe that point guard spot. And with Simmons, his biggest mentor is Patty Mills, who's on the Nets too. So, I mean, I think the Nets are winning
and
this.
And the Nets also get Seth Curry.
Yeah.
So I know.
No, I know.
No, like, he's one of the best.
He's a great role player. Yeah. He's a great role player, and that's something that you need. You can have that star player, but like Philadelphia has been the perfect example. If you don't have the right role players around him, then it's not going to work out. And I think that Brooklyn, what they're doing now is they are putting all their focus on Kevin Durant because he is the guy in Brooklyn. So they're putting all these players around him who can do the dirty work and let Kevin Durant do what he does best.
And I think that's just a great point, Joey. You talk about the role players. That gets so overlooked in today's star culture of NBA basketball where you try to stack all these star players, but then you need those role players still to complement them. You need those guys coming off the bench, eating up those dirty minutes. And I think that could also be good for Ben Simmons, is that he's probably going to transition to more of a role player for the Nets because he was drafted number one overall. It didn't work out, as Joe just said. That's a lot of pressure to have to deal with night in and night out, still in the same city that drafted you first overall. So for him to get that change of scenery, be more of the fourth option, that could be huge for him to not have that much pressure on him.
It's just interesting to see because he's going to go to Brooklyn and he's going to not have to shoot. Like, he doesn't have to shoot. You're around some of the best shooters in the world already. Joe Harris, KD, Seth Curry now comes with him too and everything. And his role is pretty much just kind of like a Draymond. He's not a Draymond Green, like, personality-wise, but he doesn't have to go out there and score whatsoever.
No, he's
he'll
not
go out
the
there,
primary
be a playmaker.
It's okay for him.
He'll be a big guy out there, and he'll still be able to be one of the best defenders, defensive player of the year candidate for years to come. And I think it was just a great, great trade for both teams. Like, I mean, both teams improved today.
And talking about guys who have not worked out so far, who are highly touted, Kristaps Porzingis got dealt today. And, wow, how his career has fallen.
I mean, yeah, he came into the league. Everyone, a lot of Knicks fans not happy they got him. And then he had a couple of really good years and then goes to the Mavericks. Knicks fans are upset. Mavs fans are really happy. And he still continues to be like that same type of Kristaps he was towards the end of his Knicks career. And now he just gets traded for, who was it?
It was Spencer Dinwiddie and then David Bertans.
Yeah.
But, like, not who, if you're New York drafting Kristaps Porzingis, not who you evaluate his value at.
Yeah, and another thing, too, to look at here is Kristaps Porzingis, obviously him and Luka are supposed to be the big pairing down in Dallas. They're supposed to bring them to newer heights that they have not seen in, you know, since Dirk, really, and his team has went to the finals and won a championship. So I'm going to be interested to see what kind of direction they decide to go with in Dallas, because you get a guy in Spencer Dinwiddie who is, you know, you wouldn't say a star
player.
He's a role guy. Solid in his career. He's had his definitely great years. But you have a guy in Luka Doncic who's a superstar, an MVP caliber player, and you have a bunch of role players around him. You kind of need to get him another guy. So I'm going to be interested to see how Dallas takes that direction with him, because he's kind of on his own now down there. I mean, not to say, like, to discredit any of the other players that are on that team, but they're all kind of role-player guys, not guys that can come out and, you know, give them 20 points a game or like Porzingis could.
And I can appreciate if Dallas is trying to use this to go about the rebound or the rebuild, but I just don't
think...
They're
not rebuilding, yeah.
But I just don't think that that's what this move was supposed to be, and I think that's where the team is.
Porzingis was just... He just wasn't good.
He wasn't. He wasn't.
He wasn't doing anything for the Mavericks to win games.
But the Mavs.
And I think Dinwiddie, even Bertans, I mean, he got that huge contract and kind of has been not as great as he was before, especially from shooting from beyond the three for the Wizards and everything. But I think just Porzingis, they needed to just move on from him. And I think they got a really good return in Dinwiddie and Bertans. And for the Wizards, they did a couple of interesting moves, too. And now that Bradley Beal's out, who knows what they're doing up there.
I just don't think that Dallas is a good team, but they want to take that next step, and I just don't think they have the players to get it done.
No.
Like, I like Tim Hardaway. He's a good player, and obviously Luka Doncic is incredible.
Dorian Finney-Smith, I think, signed a contract extension today, who's been a...
Yeah.
But those aren't guys, like you're saying, that
those
especially
are not,
out in the West, you're not going to take
those
down.
Aren't guys you make a deep run in the playoff
never.
With. You need another guy to complement Luka to be that second option, and they just don't have it right now. And I think that if you were going to make moves, that's what you should have been going for, not Spencer Dinwiddie, who's going to be the sixth or seventh man off your bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you bring that back to not having the guys around him. We kind of mentioned that a little earlier, Leo, about this being a superstar league where teams are kind of stacking superstars on one team. You look at the Nets now, they had Harden, Durant, Irving on one team. Now they have Irving, Durant, and Simmons, a couple of superstar-caliber players. Luka's kind of the only superstar in Dallas, and he can only do so much as a player, one player against, when you're on the West. You play teams like Golden State, for example, Curry. You got Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, a lot of good players. You can't really compete against those teams like that with one guy.
But imagine telling your kids that a team of James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving never even made it to an NBA Finals game. And that's just
they never even made
about.
It through one season.
They never even made it through an entire season, everything. But another, you're talking about all these superstars going places. Damian Lillard, he's still on the Portland Trailblazers. They just traded away Robert Covington and then also CJ McCollum. And so Damian Lillard is just up there in Portland. He's always said he wants to stay loyal and everything, and he's always been doing that, but like what direction?
God, Portland is making it so hard for him to do that.
What direction would you want to even go if you're a Portland fan and then if you're the front office? Because you probably want to just go over the rebuilding phase.
Right. It's like for the Trailblazers, do you have this star? It's almost like for their fans, do you want to see him go win a championship elsewhere? Because clearly they're not going to give him the opportunity to do it. At what point do you decide it's okay to move on from him if it's going to be better to go on elsewhere?
Yeah.
And it makes sense that Portland is frustrated, right? Because you have Damian Lillard, who is always hovering around a top five player in the league. Like, he's top five to top ten every season.
But he never had that guy.
And CJ McCollum was kind of that guy.
Yeah.
He was. CJ McCollum, I think, is very underrated. I think CJ McCollum has been great for a good chunk of his career.
I just feel like them together, like as two guards, you need like versatile.
Exactly.
Thing.
So they lacked like that big presence, and they tried so many different options. And so as a Portland fan, you're looking at it, you're like, wow, we have these two really talented guys and we couldn't do jack with it.
It's kind of like we talked about with the MLB last week, how teams that have like these star players don't choose to prioritize around him. It's like Mike Trout over in LA, like where he just has have a generational talent, but he can't ever do anything.
But they bring
him.
In money for the organization. That's what matters.
At what point, as a Portland fan, do you want to see them cut bait and let him go be free elsewhere? And I think as we got like about 5 minutes left in the segment, we haven't even touched on the Chicago Bulls. Yeah, so there was a lot of questions going in about them. How we saw Patrick Williams' name floated around a lot of rumors. This is a team that's depleted by injuries right now, and they kind of stood pat. Where do we think that was the right move for them, or should they have added some more pieces?
I know they're not a healthy team right now. They're really in a good spot. They're still a top two seed in the Eastern Conference right now. I'm okay with sitting where we're at right now because we got a lot of guys unhealthy, a lot of talks with Patrick Williams potentially being traded, and I'm okay with them not making a move because I like Patrick Williams a lot, and you'd have to give him up to get anybody to really make an impact on your team. And I'm okay with not doing anything right now. I trust the front office right now. They've made some good moves. I understand you want to maybe make a move to try to go win it, but I think you have some pieces right now where if you're healthy, you can make a run at it.
And with the salary cap, they're in like a tough spot too. You really didn't have a lot of flexibility. I mean, there's the buyout period that's about to be coming up in a little bit. So, I mean, I'm sure to see some action in that category. But with Patrick Williams, he brings a side of defense that the Bulls just really need at that four spot and everything. And once he comes back, I think that just is going to make a big difference for their playoff run.
And we joked about it when Braden Bilak was on the show that the Bulls are going to the White Sox and just say, wait till we get our guys healthy. But if you look at how the Bulls operated this offseason, was they went and they made their moves that other teams are making at the deadline now. Mm-hmm. They did that in the offseason, got DeMar, got Lonzo. They got Vucevic last trade deadline. So they didn't need to go get that franchise-altering player.
Yeah.
Now they had that great team chemistry. If they could get back to that point, I think it does make sense that they didn't want to mess with that and bring somebody else in at this point.
I think that it would have been very nice to see the Bulls pull the trigger on something.
Thad Young.
Just because Thaddeus Johnson, baby.
Yeah,
Just because of the injury problems. And that's kind of a concerning thing when you're going and you're looking to make this really deep playoff run and you've had guys who have missed considerable chunks of the season. It's just kind of worrisome if you're a Bulls fan. Because if you have a guy go down, you, like Leo said, you can't rely on that, wait till we're healthy, because you're not always going to be healthy. And I think it would have been nice to see them just fill it out a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a fair point, definitely, indeed, to try to fill out the roster. But like I said, it's, you know, it's not guys that are out for season-ending injuries. They're guys that are supposed to be coming back. Like Lonzo Ball is supposed to be back here in a week or two. Caruso is supposed to be back very soon. And Patrick Williams is supposed to be back by the end of the year.
But I would assume it, too, just stepping out as really helps that, because if they don't pick him and everything, then maybe they are searching for that type of guard spot. And but with those two guys being out, it really hurts your defense.
And it's just so concerning when you're going in, when you're going into the playoffs. And like right now, it doesn't matter that those guys are out for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. If you're trying to, if you're grinding in a seventh game, like a seven game Western Conference final, you have a star player miss two games, it's a wrap.
And just like we said there, we're going to take a wrap on this segment. And when we come back, we're going to keep things on the hardwood. We're going to bring the play the three up, three down pick'em segment. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the three up, three down.
Three up, three down.
Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
You heard the intro from Zach Wilson. It's time to play the three up, three down, our basketball season pick'em segment. Mr. Joey Dwyer, do the honors of telling us what this game is and how we play it.
So, Leo, what this game is and how we play it, we pick three, or we pick six NCAA men's basketball Division I games, yep. Three favorites, three underdogs, according to the ESPN win probability percentage. One of them has to be Missouri Valley Conference game, and then one of the games has to be, or can be, over an 80% favorite. And so the way that the standings are shaken up, feels good.
Come on.
Feels real good.
I got a
two-game lead over Leo, who's in second. Joe Kennedy, who started with maybe one of the worst starts we've ever seen. A 1-5, then a 2-4.
Yeah.
Looked absolutely brutal. Has come back from the depths of hell and has really made a comeback. Him and Steve Cease jockeying for that 3-4 spot. Sure. Steve Cease has a game on him. And then the guest taken up by Andre Vola. They're above 500. They're one game above 500, but they're in last place where they ought to be.
And Eric Schweizer did go 4-2 last week, so he's getting them back up. Definitely. Let's get things going with the picks here. I'll start things off with my first favorite. It's my over 80 game. You guys already know where I'm going with this. It's the Wagner Seahawks hosting Merrimack on Saturday. Wagner's a 95.5% favorite. If it's not broke, don't fix it. We're riding the Seahawks here.
I'll be taking my Seahawks a little bit later, okay. But I'm not even going to say anything about this one. Gonzaga's playing Pacific tonight.
Play the hits.
So, Andrew...
Yeah, exactly. I got my over 90% game. I got a Valley game actually this weekend. Missouri State over the Beacons of Valparaiso. Yeah, Missouri State at home. I think it's an easy choice.
And they say great minds think alike, or in this case, mediocre minds also think the same. As I'm also taking the Bears of Missouri State to beat the Beacons at 92.5%. Oh, and then Steve Cease's picks. Hey, these are going to be a whale of a good time, gentlemen.
Yes, Joey's buying time. He's pulling up Steve's picks on his phone here.
It's a group message with the three of us.
20 picks, and he's like, the yellow rings are
picks every week.
Okay, you know, he's picking Gonzaga over Pacific, too. Yeah. Moving on.
Is he actually?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I thought you were just making up
his
pick.
No, he followed my way.
So for my next one, getting things back on track here, it's my Ivy League game of the week here. My favorite conference in the nation. We got Dartmouth at Princeton. I think I've said before, Princeton's frauds. I still think that's true, but they're a 78.6% favorite. Dartmouth only has two wins on the season.
Leo, I don't know.
I think Leo's gonna eat his words.
But tonight in the Big Ten, after breaking my heart by a lot on Tuesday night, the Boilermakers are heading up to Ann Arbor, boys, and Purdue comes into this game as a 73.4% favorite, which is rightfully so because Michigan is completely washed. I am a Purdue hater, but there's always much worse, and that's Michigan. So I'm going Purdue over Michigan.
I'm going Colorado State over Fresno State at 63.2%. Colorado State, really good basketball team this year. They were one of the most remaining undefeated teams there for a while. Only have three losses on the year. I think even though they're on the road, I think it's a clear
Bulldogs
choice.
Bulldogs got me a big W.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
An underdog.
All right, my next game. A lot of tension in the room right now because Evola is a big Duke guy. I'm a big UNC guy. So I'm rolling with the Tar Heels. They're 79.8% favorite over the Florida State University Seminoles. And so, sorry, it took me a second.
North Carolina guy out of nowhere, huh?
So we're taking the Tar Heels in that one. Steve Cease's next game, he's taking Wright State at Milwaukee. Wright State's a 75.2% favorite.
All right. For my last favorite pick, we're going to go in the Valley here. This is a bit of a tough one to make, but we got Northern Iowa visiting Illinois State coming up on Tuesday. The Panthers come in as a road favorite at 66%. I think they are going to take care of business there if it's against the Birds.
Mm-hmm. And so for this one, I was going to pick Duke over Clemson here, but you clowns, I think, are riding with Duke. And Duke, I just don't like. Sorry, Andrew Vola. I'm really trying to get into you right now and your nerves. Instead, I'm looking at the Arizona Wildcats. They're going to head to Washington State tonight and take on the Cougars. Arizona's been one of the best teams this year in the entire country, and Washington State has one of their last five games, but the Wildcats are 72.7 favorites, and I think their offense is going to score 80-plus and get the W.
All right, I got Monmouth over Manhattan, the Jespers over there. 65.5% favorites Monmouth is over Manhattan.
And then I know I just gave that whole speech about UNC, but I'm picking Duke over Clemson. 70.7% favorite. Steve Cease just texted me. He loved the idea of Leo's Valley pick, so he's going with the Panthers over the Redbirds as well.
All right. Great minds think alike, I guess, Steve. As I'm going with my first underdog, we got a top 25 matchup just barely, as we have the 24th seeded UConn Huskies visiting the 25th seeded Xavier. Everybody's picking this one, so I had to get it out first.
God.
We got UConn as a 45.6% favorite. I'm going with them as my first dog. 45% underdog, I should say.
Yeah, so I'm going to head to the beautiful state of Ohio, where 25th-ranked Xavier Musketeers or the 24th-ranked UConn Huskies. I mean, Leo, you've talked about it. Both the teams have kind of struggled over the past five games. And Xavier, they got just a big X as their logo, and X means no, so I'm not taking them. And Dan Hurley, the carpenter, he's going to get the upset here, and UConn's going to win.
I'm going Arkansas over Alabama. This was an interesting game to pick because Arkansas and Alabama have some good wins, quality wins this year over ranked opponents. Arkansas coming off beating the number one team in the country in Auburn. I'm taking Arkansas at 30.5% underdogs.
And I don't know I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this guy, right? Really good guard by the name of R.J. Cole. He's averaging 16 points, 4.5 assists a game, and he has been an absolute stud for the UConn Huskies, who are going to upset Xavier going in to Ohio and taking him down. Steve Cease's first underdog.
Don't pick Xavier.
He's taking Bryant at Long Island.
It's going to be a good one there. As for my second underdog, we're taking things to the MAC. We got Bowling Green visiting Miami, Ohio. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to much MAC-tion basketball, but Miami is on a four-game losing streak, so I'm going with Bowling Green as a 46.1% underdog on the road.
Love those Eagles. I mean, for my next one, I'm going to go to the Missouri Valley Conference, where the Bradley Braves are having a surprise season, and they're going to be hosting the Drake Bulldogs on Saturday. I mean, Bradley's 14-11 on the year and are favored at 60.3% in this matchup. But I don't like Bradley, and I don't think any of us like Bradley, so I'm going to be taking the Bulldogs in this one in the underdog MVC pick.
Bradley, more like Badvee, am I right?
I was waiting for somebody to make that. There we go.
Another underdog pick, something we haven't heard yet here tonight. I lied. UConn over Xavier.
You can't trust this guy, I'll tell you what.
Tommy Cease has that one too, Joey, right?
Dude, I wish.
Perfect 4-for-4.
I might just make it up. Might just replace one of his underdog picks.
Why haven't we started doing that, just messing with Steve's picks?
That is, and it's even better because we know he's listening to the show right now.
Yeah, he can't do anything. Yeah, so what we say? We're the official say.
Steve, I hope you have fun picking Pacific this week. All right, so for my next underdog pick, I'm going with the Penn State Nittany Lions. They're going up to Minnesota, a little Big Ten action. They've got a 36.1% chance to win, but Minnesota's only won two conference games. The Nittany Lions have won four. And looking at the matchups, like, Penn State hasn't beaten bums. Like, they took down Iowa, and we all know that Iowa is a great basketball school. So we're going with Penn State. Steve is picking New Mexico State. They're traveling to Utah Valley, 41.5%. Steve's riding with them.
All right, look at that. For my final pick, we're going to take more action here. Eastern Michigan at Central Michigan. Big matchup in the state of Michigan. Eastern Michigan, I don't know, what are they, the Eagles or something? They are a 48.7% underdog. I like those odds. I'm rolling with them there.
And for my last pick, shout out to Joey Dwyer for reminding me of my love for UNC Wilmington. The Seahawks enter Saturday's game as a 49.9% underdog, and they're at home. They might have let me down last week, but every team has their setbacks, so I'm taking UNC Wilmington over Charleston.
I'm going back to the Missouri Valley Conference. I think this one was a pretty fairly obvious underdog choice, Drake over Bradley. I know Bradley's been hot Yeah. But the Bulldogs are one of the best teams in the Missouri Valley Conference. Still, Drake over Bradley at 39%.
Bradley, more like Badley.
Nice.
All right, my last pick. Joe picked his Seagulls. You picked your Wagner. I'm riding with my team, the Long Beach State Beach, baby. They're going to Hawaii to play the Rainbow Warriors. They've only got 25.5% chance to win, but you know what? They're going in there, and they're pulling it out. Let's go, Beach. And then Steve's last pick is going to be VCU beating George Mason.
All right, and there you have it. That was a three up, three down. This was a great show, guys. We started things off talking about Leah Johnson and the Michigan State hire. We took things to the gridiron, talked about the NFL championship. Then we talked NBA trade deadline on the hardwood with Andrew Avola. We round things out with a three up, three down. If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it on podcast form on WZND.com shortly after. And just a reminder, if you want to join WZND, get to Fell Hall, room 180 right now.
You'll get to see us. How fun. I wore a button down for this.
I didn't, but Joey's what's happening right now. They're probably... probably going to miss the start of the meeting, but get there now, because this was a wild show. You could take our jobs if you really want them, but we'd like to thank Andrew Avola. We didn't have any guests to thank, so I don't know. I'm just filling time here, but next week we're going to try to have a guest on, likely someone from the women's basketball team, because they've been off to a great season, so we want to talk to one of our friends from that team. But that's all we have for tonight's show. For Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, I'm Leo Stauder. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week at 6 o'clock on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.